ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे
Do you feel better after chanting the Brahmas, after chanting the Sri Ishapanishad and the Upadeshamrita? You can feel better every day. Just make time to recite these prayers. And one little trick is you can record it or have somebody with really good pronunciation record it and then listen to it as soon as you wake up in the morning, before you go to bed at night, while you're in your car, and just keep reciting it over and over again until you know it. And then you can repeat it. It's also good to take with you when you go on pilgrimage. Whenever you go see the deities, you can recite these prayers. Take a little extra time. When you go into holy places, as you're on your entrance, you can recite these notable prayers. And Krishna will notice you then. He'll take notice. So tonight we're going to talk about our greatest asset. What asset do we have that's most valuable to us? In fact, it's our main asset, and that is our attention. Attention is defined as a notice taken of someone or something, the regarding of someone or something as interesting or important. Attention. Let's look at, well, first of all, we'll talk about ways that attention is refined or affected. Dainini is online. What's his question? Before we go into this, I want to hear Dainini Prabhu's question because I rushed through last week. And we got late, and then I didn't answer his question. And I felt bad about it ever since. Do you have it? Oh, he has to resend it? Okay. Thank you. So we're getting sensory input all the time, and there are certain things that we notice and some things that we don't notice. There's some things that we give our attention to and some things that we don't give any attention to at all. And according to the Bhagavad Gita, the reason that we notice some things and don't notice other things is because there's a filtering system that comes through the mind. The mind takes in all the imagery and the impulses that we're getting from our various senses. And as it enters the mind, according to its particular position, which is determined by the modes of nature it's affected by, will accept or reject certain things. Some people look at the same object and think that it's valuable. Another person looks at an object and thinks that it's not worthy of his or her attention. It just lets it pass. So the mind is choosing options all the time. According to the impulses that we're getting, then this function of the mind is called accepting and rejecting. And so decisions that are going on in the mind have to do with the impressions we've gained. Actually, our mind is what we've fed it. Whatever we feed the mind, it becomes. And this is one of the great secrets of refining the intelligence and refining one's attention, is to understand that we have some choice about what we let into our sensory field. And according to the way in which we allow certain things in and reject other things, the mind will develop a certain mode of nature. It's because of association with the modes of nature in this world that we end up in good places sometimes and bad places at other times. In fact, all places are bad in this material world because in material consciousness, when they're not related to Krishna, then they don't do us any good because we are eternal parts and parcels of Krishna. Our main interest is in being connected to Krishna. We are connected, but our consciousness becomes disconnected when it is affected by the lower modes of material nature. Krishna says in the 13th chapter of the Gita, Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti janganan karanam guna sangosya sarasad yoni janmasu. Here's the cause, he said, of your attaining good and bad situations in the material world. He said it's because of your association with the modes of material nature. How we associate ourselves is the will determine our direction, will determine our fortune, and so forth. And therefore the mind must be molded in such a way, must be refined, so that it is a clear medium for thinking of Krishna. After all, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, manmana bhavamat bhakto, manmana bhavamat bhakto. In your mind, think of me all the time. And when the mind is contaminated by the modes of material nature, when it's affected by various stimuli that are not connected to Krishna, then it will develop certain habit patterns and will be attracted to various objects in this world that aren't related to Krishna. So reforming one's attention has to do with several factors. Just first, I'm going to enter a couple of verses into evidence. Please feel free to turn your phones on, and if you can, turn them up loud, because if they go off in the class, then you can then purchase at least a Shri Upanishad. Is that fair? Radha Kri Prabhu, is it fair? It's okay? Okay, how much is it? $5? It's not fair?
That's unfair to those who have the phones. At least they should get Srimad Bhagavatam.
I know, but when we say that, then it just sort of rolls over because it's too extreme. Why don't you get a couple of Sri Upanishads? Let's put them up here and get a little closer to that. Can we have a couple? So turn your phones on. If they go off, you can buy a Sri Upanishad for $5. Fair enough? Everyone? Okay, fair enough. Okay. So I want to give, here it is, Sri Upanishad. Feel free to turn your phones on, and you can buy one of these for $5 if your phone goes off. Okay? Fair enough. So, in the Gita, Krishna says, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. He describes a way in which one is transported by the modes because of developing a false ego, a false sense of being the controller of this world, and identification with the material body. So, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha hankara vimutatma. And Krishna describes that a person in this situation to be very foolish. Can we see the verse, please? I think it's 327. 327. Krishna, Krishna, Hari, Hari. So the word for word says, Prakriti of material nature, kriyamanani being done, gunai by the modes, karmani activities, sarvashaha all kinds of, ahankara vimudha bewildered by false ego, atma the spirit soul, karta doer, aham I iti thus manyate he thinks, and the translation says, the spirit soul bewildered by the influence of false ego thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Prabhupada writes, two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness, convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything, he does not know the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is the symptom of his nescience. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as such, his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna in Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Hrishikesha, the master of the senses of the material body. For due to his long misuse of the senses and sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. So this is the bewilderment which is caused by one's identification with the material nature and the body as being the self, and then thinking that I'm the doer, and that I'm the body. And then one becomes swept away by the modes of material nature. But through the refinement of one's mind and intelligence and senses, purification, one comes to perfect knowledge. The refinement takes place through the process of devotional service. It's a positive cultivation, and it's mentioned in the Shastra. Sarvopati vinirmuktam tat prat vena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchite. That by serving the Lord of the senses, that one gradually purifies the senses and comes free from this designated life of thinking that I'm the doer and this body is myself. And when one begins to emerge from this dark ignorance, then one comes to knowledge, and that's described in the Bhagavad Gita in a verse which is practically the opposite of Prakrite Kriyamanani, and that says, Tatvavit tu Mahabaho, number of that verse? Gunakarma Vibhagayo. Here, take this. What is it? Okay. Tatvavit tu Mahabaho, Gunakarma Vibhagayo, Gunaguneshu Vartanta iti Matva Nasajite. Tatvavit. One who is, the vit means to know something, so one who knows tatva, the truth. Tatvavit tu Mahabaho. This is Krishna speaking to Arjuna, so he calls him, O Mighty Armed. What is it? Tatvavit tu Mahabaho, Guna Karma Vibhagayoho. 328, the next verse. Don't have to go far. You're right there. See, Tatvavit, the knower of the absolute truth, to, but, Mahabaho, O Mighty Armed One. So this is a but verse, because the last verse says, Prakrite Kriyamanani, and this one says, but, O Mighty Armed One, one who is the knower of the absolute truth, guna karma, of works under material nature, vibhaga yoho, he knows the difference between working under the modes of material nature, guna, senses, guneshu, in sense gratification, vartante, are being engaged, iti thus, matva, thinking, na, never, sajite, becomes attached. Translation is, One who is in knowledge of the Absolute Truth, O Mighty Arm, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the differences between work and devotion and work for fruit of results. Now, hear the difference in the purport from the last verse we read. Purport, the knower of the Absolute Truth is convinced of his awkward position in material association. That's important. But it doesn't take much. If one is informed from the scripture that we're in an awkward situation, it more or less is a relief. Because if one thinks that by hard endeavor and by arrangement of arranging one's life, adjusting one's situation in life, that one can come to a sublime situation by material arrangement, then one will always fall short and be disappointed. So accepting that we're in an awkward situation. So the knower of the Absolute Truth is convinced of his awkward position in material association. When we're materially associated, who we are non-material. We associate with matter. It's awkward. He knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and that his position should not be in material creation. He knows his real identity as part and parcel of the Supreme, who is eternal bliss and knowledge. And he realizes that somehow or other he is entrapped in the material conception of life. In his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. He therefore engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of the material senses, which are all circumstantial and temporary. He knows that his material condition of life is under the supreme control of the Lord, consequently is not disturbed by all kinds of material reactions, which he considers to be the mercy of the Lord. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, one who knows the Absolute Truth in three different features, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of God, it is called Tattvavit, for he knows also his own factual position in relationship with the Supreme. And now, before I move on to unveil my case that I'm making tonight, let's take a few reflections. First of all, how are you all? Is everyone okay? Yes. Do you feel that the material world's awkward? It's a little awkward, right? Yeah, but you're perfectly situated, because although we're in an awkward situation, you're doing everything that you have to do in order to come to the perfect stage of life. Yes.
So I was looking up the word awkward in the dictionary, and its origin is from English, from the Middle English, and it means turned in the wrong direction.
Turned in the wrong direction. Turned in the wrong direction.
And I was just thinking that when you are in the material association, you are turned in the wrong direction.
Absolutely. This is mentioned in the Shastra. Bhakti Parishana. No, excuse me. Bhayam Dvitiya Binibeshatasya Ishat Apetasya means turned in the wrong direction. Viparyo Smritihi. Therefore, one's intelligence becomes covered over. What else? What else did you hear that was helpful to you? So we're here to take some help from Krishna. We need this refreshing information coming from outside the closed walls of the material world. And the more that sound vibration in the material world bounces around and gets affected by the lower modes of material nature, the more agitating it becomes. And the more the situation becomes awkward for everybody. In fact, in Kali Yuga, situation is predicted to become more and more awkward because of the lower effect of the lower modes of material nature. But one doesn't have to subject oneself to that. One can effectively live through Kali Yuga without being touched by these modes of material nature. Avoid the awkwardness of this age.
Maharaj, like how it's under his own false ego, a person is bewildered, thinking himself to be a doer, which are actually done by the modes of nature.
Yes, so you're noting that fact.
Yes.
Yes. It's by the misidentification with the material modes of with the material body, thinking I'm the doer.
I was just noticing, Prabhu, how in the purport, Prabhupada says that the activities of material senses are circumstantial and temporary, but still the results are very heavy, and the results are what? The result that comes, even though the activities are temporary and circumstantial, the activities that we do of the material senses, he says that the activities of material senses are circumstantial and temporary. But what I'm thinking is the result that comes out of that activity, that result is very sticky, and it stays with us, it seems like, for a long time.
It's for a reason. And it's very interesting for one who's working diligently to refine his or her intelligence and the way he or she works in this world. That stickiness is actually a help, because one who realizes the how every subtle activity that we perform in this world has a reaction, one becomes more and more determined to work in a way that is non-reactive. And there has to be some consequence for it to really register, because the disease is to again and again try for material sense gratification. But when the result is so sticky, as you put it, one who's on the path of refinement becomes more and more careful not to stick his or her big nose into these sticky situations, because there is a reaction. And so you find that people who are advanced spiritually or advancing spiritually are extremely careful to keep the transcendental vibration going and to keep the environment clean. Because we have to have a clean environment, and we have to be careful how we associate ourselves in this world. In many different ways, we can become infected by the modes of material nature, so we have to be fortified. It's interesting how strong the reaction is, how sticky it is. However, all those things can be overcome. The reaction of the senses, yes, twindra gopam atavendra mohosa karma bandaru rupa palabhajana matanoti karmani nirdahati kintu chabhakti bhajam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Brahma Samhita says that those who are engaged in this bhakti bhajan, they're worshipping Krishna by enunciating prayers, becomes free from this karmic reaction. What is even more dangerous is Vaishnava Paradha, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Upadeva Chindi, that it cuts down the creeper of devotional service. That's very even more scary. You have to be careful on that side. But it can be overcome. So one has to realize how difficult and sticky the situation is in the material world, and carefully practice sadhana, bhakti. And also, we have to depend on Krishna's grace, because as it says in the Bhagavatam, even if you slip while you're performing serious devotional service, Suparambulam bhajata priyasya tyaktanya bhavasya hare priyasaha vikarmayachchotpajitam katanchit dhunoti sarvam hridi sannivishta. If you're sincerely practicing devotional service and you slip back into vikarma, for some reason it just overwhelms you at some point, and Krishna, from within your heart, helps to purify you of that fault very quickly, because you're on the path of devotional service. Thank you for your points. Yes, Ramananda Sakha.
Yeah, generally this false ego is so strong that even for devotees also, even for those who are...
What's so strong?
False ego.
False ego.
Is so strong that even for devotees also, even after hearing or reading the same that chapter, that verse many, many times, still it's very, very difficult to overcome this false ego. Because as soon as that person does something, he thinks that I have done it. And at least in subtle way, that feeling is there. How can we overcome that?
Yeah, the false ego is always sitting there ready to appropriate any activity that we do. And then when it comes to devotional service, the false ego will also be standing by to say, okay, I'll take that. And that's why Raghunath Das Goswami, our Prayojana Acharya, in writing the Manak Shiksha, seeks to analyze these various appropriations by the false ego so that we can become aware of them. The first step is awareness. And this verse is very important. Tattva vittu mahabaho. I like this verse. It's very practical. Because what it's saying is, once you become aware, once you become tattva vit, when you know the truth, what actually is in your best interest and what's not in your best interest, you become clear about that, then you become more discriminating in how you let your false ego in. But you have to be aware of it and watch how it's coming in. He sees, for instance, that I'm performing devotional service, Raghunath Das Goswami, Manak Shiksha. He says, then I want puja, labha, pratishta. Puja means I want some worship, some recognition for what I just did. Labha, I want some gain. I want to get a premium from this. What do I get out of it? And then pratishta, it's like I got some entitlement now, some position. Now I'm some kind of expert. And so he warns against these and says these kinds of desires, which are the appropriations committee that goes on from the false ego, are like the stool of a hog. A hog eats stool, then he passes stool. It's doubly obnoxious. And so we should also become aware subtly of how the false ego is appropriating whatever we do. And by praying to Krishna, by refining our devotional service, and getting our reward from some other place, we actually have to find this reward that comes from our relationship with Krishna. Those who are experiencing the reciprocation of service for service. When one does service for service without any expectation in return, and then feels satisfied, not just satisfied, but exhilarated, as feels a reciprocation from Krishna within the heart, there's a taste. It's a higher taste than one gets from giving into the false ego and saying, yes, I'll take something for that. That's why devotees like Gopal Bhatta Goswami, when Kaviraj Goswami was writing the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said, don't write about me. I don't want to hear it. I don't want my name in there anywhere. So you don't hear about him very much. And Vaishnavas are careful because of what they're experiencing in their relationship with Krishna within their heart. And so there's a way in which also, if you go out on book distribution regularly, which we recommend because there's an instant response from your environment when you deal with all kinds of people in public who have no idea what devotional service is, no idea who you are. They don't care who you are. They just think you're maybe, some people think that you're just trying to interrupt their flow of sense gratification, which is true. But they give you instant feedback. And from that, there's a nice way in which one becomes divested of the desire to try to claim oneself to be the doer. Because in order to do that service, it's also important to not be the doer, to be the instrument. And if you get in that practice a lot, you start to get used to it. And you also realize the reaction you get when you're the doer. Krishna talks about this in the Gita, that if you're the doer, then you also have to accept the reaction to it. And if you're not the doer, then the reaction, it doesn't belong to you. You're just a servant. Just be the messenger. And that's something that one can learn by the practice of devotional service. I especially think that going out on book distribution is important. Prabhupada did it. He went all over India, distributed books all over America. And if you do this as self-purification, go out for the sake of getting that feedback from your environment, from people that you meet, immediate feedback. Sometimes you can notice, if you start to think, oh, I'm the doer, I'm convincing people, and then someone says, gives you an admonishment, then it can sober you up really quickly and think, okay, I don't want to be the doer anymore. I'll just be the instrument instead. And if we can stay in that situation, learn to be in that situation of the instrument, it's very beneficial to advancing in spiritual life. What else? Yes, Dhiraj. And then Aditya.
You mentioned that the most valuable asset we have is our attention. And also Krishna himself confirms the impact material modes of nature have on us and material energy. Daivihi Shigunamai Mama Maya Duratya. So those are very impactful points for me.
Yeah, so you said, you're repeating that I had mentioned that our most valuable asset is our attention, and the second thing you said was?
It is astonishing and really relieving to observe that material energy and its modes can be very, very strong.
Yeah, they can be very, very strong.
And can lower us.
And can what?
Lower us.
Yes, that's true. We can get swept away by those modes of material nature. And our attention, and that's the topic tonight, our attention. Just take a minute to realize that you have an attention. You have a choice of where you can place your attention. And, well, where attention goes, energy flows. Our attention is immediately followed by our life's energy, where we invest our energies. And so it's very important. It's the crux of the matter in yoga, is where you place your attention. And to learn how to place one's attention on Krishna and Krishna's service is the great trick that changes everything. Yes.
Maharaj, I had a question with the service for service that you said, the point that you said earlier. So how does one do service exclusively for service sake? Is it that one gets a reciprocation of Krishna within one's heart, one gets a higher taste, and then one does more service? Is that? But then in that case, it is not just only for service, it is for the greed of getting a higher taste. So then that kind of contradicts the previous statement. So
that's why Krishna says in the Gita, third chapter, that it's hard to discern what action is, what inaction is, and how there's action within inaction, and inaction within action. Very difficult to understand. But the science of Krishna consciousness has to do with coming to the point of non-reactive work. And the realm of desire, we are made of desire. So the impersonal idea is, this idea of the jnanis is to do away with desire, to mechanically detach oneself from all material desires and all the objects, one by one in this material world, in 1880. But the bhaktas instead transform their desire, the lust that I have for material objects, asat trishna, I have a thirst for things that don't really do me any good. That they're here today and gone tomorrow. They're part of the ashvata. The ashvata Krishna describes in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the big banyan tree. Actually, I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes how that Swa means tomorrow, and ashva in ashvata means not tomorrow. Ashvata, sta means to stay, means it won't be around tomorrow. And when we transfer our desire, and we are units of desire, it's not that desire goes away, it simply becomes purified and redirected, then that desire for serving Krishna is considered to be perfect and non-reactive. Therefore, service for service means that when we desire simply to please Krishna's senses and not our own by doing our service, then that's considered to be service for service. And in that, there's a great reciprocation from Krishna within the heart, or personally. Yogakshemam bahamyaham, he says, to those who simply give themselves their full consciousness to me, really, they out of love, I just want to serve you. This is possible in love. You can see in the love of a mother for her child, there's a way in which the mother simply gives herself 24 hours a day out of love. Such sacrifice to be a mother. You have to have a sense of love, otherwise why would the mother do it? And you can see how one can do service for service. Why does a mother serve her child through so many years, her whole life? During babyhood, she's there 24 hours a day just listening to hear how the child's breathing, how it's making sure the child eats throughout adolescence and then even into old age. You know, there's this attachment. So Prabhupada said that this motherhood, it most resembles the selfless kind of desire that one develops in spiritual life. So that's what means service for service.
Just like mother serves her children, it looks like almost she's programmed to serve her children. Because
it's not programmed, it's actually spontaneous. Mm. It's kind of spontaneous. But it is kind of like that. You know, there's a sense, but it, that whatever we see coming through the animation of living entities in this material world, although you may say it's programmed because you can see the birds doing it and the squirrels and everything like that, saving their children from the river or from and protecting them and so forth, that still is evidence of the desire of the soul. But you have to understand the science, that it's simply directed towards something that's temporary. And this is exactly what Krishna is saying. That same spontaneous kind of love that you see living entities have for their children in this world needs to be transferred. Twai me nanya vishaya matir madhu pate sakrit ratin udvahata dada gangi vaugam udanvati. There's a natural flow of that love when it becomes purified that goes towards Krishna in the same way. So we take evidence from things here in the material world.
Okay.
Okay?
The comment I was going to make is that that almost mothers are, it looks like almost they're programmed to serve their children, and but if they were, if all the beings were programmed to serve the God in the same way, if we'd have done it that way, then it would have.
Well, we have to reprogram, because when we come in contact with material nature, we become conditioned. That's what the programming is. We become conditioned to have love for matter, and that's known as lust. And when we become free from that conditioning, the highest conception of that means to transfer those same feelings that we have for matter to love for Krishna. Then it's eternal and perfect. And that can be done through the process of bhakti. That's what we're doing. Yes. Now you have to wait for the mic, because there's at least 40 people online who want to hear what you have to say.
Hello. Well, you very nicely mentioned how a woman and a mother are capable of showing complete devotion and love, a bhakti bhav for their family and kids. And even Krishna admits that Radharani, Yashoda, Ma, they all displayed that kind of love and bhakti towards Krishna. And yet I think many times in Bhagavatam that we were reading recently, Srila Prabhupada mentions how the Sudras, three, and Asuras are the three categories where Bhagavad Gita especially aimed for, because somehow I get a sense when reading Bhagavatam that repeatedly there's mentioned that the stri especially need for this bhava or the need for the Bhagavad Gita teaching. It somehow appears to suggest that there is a lower platform that women are placed in that, and that you need to be, the women especially are encouraged to get the wisdom from Bhagavad Gita, when I think from our discussion we are realizing that women are already have a lot of that bhakti bhav. Could you comment?
Yeah, that's why Prabhupada mentions in one of his purports in the Bhagavatam that you'll notice, for instance, in India at religious functions, all the women show up. I see it all over the world, actually. You go to Asia, some programs, mostly women show up. So there is a softness of heart that's there within women that Prabhupada noted is very conducive to this bhakti process. So that motherly affection, it's spontaneous, that can be dovetailed. Of course, we're not our bodies, so any kind of conditioning can be overcome. But whatever propensities we dovetail to devotional service will then become purified.
What I meant was, I think he seemed to kind of mention that the Shudras, the Stri, kind of in the same category that need enlightenment more than the men. I mean, I may be misinterpreting it, but I don't know if you understand.
Well, Krishna says at the end of the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that there are, on the material platform, there are gradations. That's obvious. There are gradations of conditioning. And according to the body we get, if you get a body of a squirrel, you're going to be conditioned to run up trees and grab nuts and stuff. It's just the way it is. And, you know, and according to the particular body that you get in this world, male, female, it has a certain kind of conditioning, and it's not all the same. Some men have higher modes, and therefore there's categorization on the material level called varnashrama in order to facilitate whatever kind of conditioning that one has so that one can engage it in Krishna's service, where he says in the 18th chapter, svesya karma nibhirata, whatever your particular propensity is, if you engage it in Krishna's service, then it will become purified and you'll become perfect. So varnashrama is a very scientific way in which the world is observed according to the modes of material nature. And the brahmanas are in the mode of goodness, the kshatriyas in the mode of mixed passion and goodness. Then the vaishyas are a mixture of passion and ignorance, and then the shudras are mostly ignorance. And so, no, you know, it's obvious that everyone's affected in various ways by the modes of material nature. It's a very practical way of giving everyone up 2 feet on the ground so they can start off from their particular nature to serve Krishna. Of course, in the Kali Yuga, there's a way in which everyone is affected by lower modes of material nature. And therefore, it's said in the Shastra, Kalu Shudra Sambhava, everyone's born as a Shudra or lower in the Kali Yuga. But considering what one's situation is now and how to take advantage of that to engage in Krishna's service is practical. It's a good idea. It helps. Thanks for bringing that up. Couple more?
Thank you, Maharaj, for bringing the point of the reciting the verses. I was just today I was thinking morning, I was just walking to catch my train and I had some time and that time I could recite. So I was just thinking how this is such a blessing to have these things memorized that we can...
Yeah, there's a variety of spiritual sound vibration, and if you imbibe all that, then you can use it at various times to keep your interest and keep the vibration going. It's very important. Yes.
So Maharaj, so in this verse, the last statement says, according to Srimad Bhagavatam. So that is a forward reference in terms of the verse.
According to Srimad Bhagavatam, one who knows the absolute truth in three different... So what about that?
So So this is the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and here is a reference about Srimad Bhagavatam. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, I'm reading this, and it seems to me that it's a forward reference in terms of that something that I need to understand from Srimad Bhagavatam. At the same time, it says, one who knows the absolute truth in three different features. So could you please elaborate more in terms of what should I know more about absolute truth in these forms, like Brahman, Paramatma, and Supreme Personality of Godhead? And is it that absolute truth in that statement, which is capitalized, so does it mean that my constitution person is servant of Krishna, or as it defined, as it stated here, is it that we are all part and parcel of Krishna? It all sort of tells to the same thing, like my understanding that I'm part and parcel of Supreme Personality of Godhead, and my position is being the servant of Krishna. Is that absolute truth? And what should I know about the absolute truth in three different features?
Your statements are very much aligned with Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Mamaivamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manakshashanindriyani prakriti stani karshati. And that is that the soul is eternally connected with Krishna as an anga. We're part of Krishna. It's a very intimate relationship. And however, somehow or other, we've fallen into a condition where we're laboring under a mind that's conditioned by the three modes of material nature. And yes, then to realign oneself with one's eternal nature as a servant of Krishna is advised by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to consider I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. This realigns one's activities in the correct way. And the science of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Absolute Truth is given in summary in the Bhagavad Gita, but in the Srimad Bhagavatam it's given in detail. And therefore, this verse, Vedanta, that's referred to here, Vedanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yaj jnanamadvayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdite, describes how the Absolute Truth is realized in three features: Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. And this is just like there's the sun. And the sun has... Hare Krishna Bhumi, welcome back. We've been sitting here waiting for you for a while. The sun has several features, although it's one thing. If the sun comes in the room, you'll say, there's the sun. But if the actual sun globe came in the room, you'd be toast, as they say. The sun globe itself has a particular feature. It has form. And then there's the effulgence of the sun, which is more amorphous. It's undefined. But within the sun, there's Lord Narayan. Om Deya Sada Savriti Mandala Madhivarti Narayana Sahasija Sanasanavishtaha Keyuravan Makara Kundalavan Kiriti Hari Hiranmaya Vipur Dichashanga Chag. Vedic scripture says, there, within the sun, there's a form of Narayan, Surya Narayan, and he has beautiful earrings, he has four arms, he's holding his various weapons and so forth. Personalities there, behind everything. And to know these three features as one but different at the same time is perfect knowledge. And to understand that we are one with but different from the Supreme Lord is called the science of achintya bheda bheda tattva. And this was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. And this perfectly aligns one it brings one to the conclusion of divine service to the Supreme Absolute Truth. There's more to be said, but I'll leave it at that for now. And I want to talk about attention, because it's a very practical thing that to realize where our attention is going moment to moment. In fact, any self-help guru will tell you this is the secret to time management. What is the best use of my time right now? Who says that? Practically every self-help group, but especially Brian Tracy, he'll say, what is the best use of my time right now? And that's a question that in our practice of refining our consciousness, we should ask ourselves, what's the best use of my time right now? And what does it mean to best use of my time? Where I'm placing my attention? What am I giving attention to? What is my priority? And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, definitively, think of me. And he says you can do that while you go on with your work, even. In the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when he's describing how the culmination of one's efforts throughout this very short span of life that we're in right now, to think of Krishna, brings one to a position where one can successfully leave one's body and think of Krishna at the same time. Just like Bhishma Dev, he was on a bed of arrows. That's a severe situation, to be on a bed of arrows. Have you ever had a pinprick? And then think about being filled with arrows. And he was equipoised in that situation, able to speak transcendental knowledge. In fact, Krishna brought Yudhisthira to him and said, Bhishma, you tell him. Tell him about the absolute truth. Bhishma was lying there on a bed of arrows because his consciousness was so refined. His attention was not on the way in which his body was situated at that particular time, but it was situated in Krishna. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada proved it in modern day. You say, well, that was thousands of years ago, that was Bhishma Dev. Prabhupada did the exact same thing. His body was completely emaciated. There was no fat between the nerves and the bones, and therefore the doctors said that he was in excruciating pain. And sometimes, the devotees would have to come and move him because just lying on the bed, on the soft bed, it was so painful for him. Nonetheless, to his last breath, just like Bhishma, lying on a bed of arrows, he was disengaged from his body and meditating on Bhagavatam and speaking Bhagavatam. And you can read those purports for yourself. And you can see the pictures, Prabhupada lying as if on a bed of arrows with a dictaphone being held by his assistants right in front of his mouth. That's because of his consciousness not being engaged in the body. His attention was on his service. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that this is a perfectional stage. Naiva kinchit karomiti yukto manyita tatvivit pashyan shrinvan spishan jigran ashnan gachan swapan swasan. Pralapan vishrinan grinnan unvishan nimishan api indriyan indriyateshu vartanta iti dharyan. He's the perfected person, naiva kinchit. Never does he think that I am the doer. He's not thinking that this body is mine. He's seeing that it's being moved by the modes of material nature. Naiva kinchit, not at all. Naiva kinchit, not even a little bit does he think this is my body. Naiva kinchit karomiti yukto manye tatvavit. He understands the absolute truth. And then it describes how seeing, smelling, receiving, taking in, evacuating, doing all these things are simply going on as a machine, which it is. It's just like a mechanical, it is a mechanical process, biological, but mechanical. And he disassociates himself with it. So one can ascend to this kind of consciousness even while working in Silicon Valley, even while doing your job. Krishna says in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that Arjuna, you should do your work at the same time think of me. Tasmat sarvishu kalishu mama nusmara yudyacha mayarpita mano buddhir mami vashyatya samshayaha. It says, without a doubt, by that process. And what is it? It's where you're placing your attention. While you're doing your work, the acharyas say, think about how you're doing this particular work at Oracle, Google, Apple. Which ones am I missing? Intel. Let's have a call out for your favorite corporation. After all, corporations rule the world. Let's hear it for them. Cisco, yeah. Even while working in these situations, which one of our younger devotees who just tried it out, described as hell itself, one can at the same time be conscious of Krishna by thinking, I'm doing this work for Krishna. Mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, if you give the fruits of your labor to Krishna, even while you're working, then you'll be thinking the fruits are going to Krishna. And your mind follows the money. Everybody's mind follows the money. Who got the money? And if you give away your money, then your mind will follow it also. It's a practical thing. But watch your attention. See where it's where you're placing your attention. That's what you're going to get. So where attention goes, energy flows. So it's a science of attention. And refining the attention, there's a few points. One is vow. You have to make vows to fix your attention in a certain way, because inevitably the mind will run off in another direction. What you think today is important, tomorrow you may abandon and go somewhere else. That's how crazy the mind is. One day it says, this is important, next day say, I don't like it anymore. Kids do it all the time. They do it second by second, adults do it maybe month by month or year by year. But it's all a function of the mind, accepting and rejecting. So you have to make serious vows. Yesham twantakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvanva mohanir mukta bhajanti mam dhritavrata. You when you make a serious vow, dhritavrat, what's a vrat? A vrat means happiness. When you make a dhritavrat, when you're able to make serious vows in life, it's like, you know, when people climb mountains, they have to have something to hold on to. When you're going up the hill, up the mountain, you have to have points at which you can grab on. Those vows, I mean, even think of the word. It's got some space in it, a little V. You can dig it in, and you can grab on. That's where you can actually get some traction to keep your attention going, because the mind want to run off, and you say, no, I have my vow. This is where we fix our mind. And that vow can be made after reasoning very well. Use your intelligence to understand what's best for me. Where's the best place for me to place my intelligence? And then make a vow. This is where I'm going to place my intelligence every day. Where? I'm going to chant God's names every day. And some days your mind will think this is a good idea. Some days your mind will think this is not a good idea. But your vow will dig in and you'll say, I don't care what my mind says, because my intelligence says we made a vow and we're going to stick to it. And it's a well-reasoned vow, and that's it. That's a vow. Dhritavrat. Make a dhritavrat. So that helps making well-reasoned vows, and that's why we make a big deal of them. The other night we had an initiation ceremony here, and devotees made a vow amidst great pomp and circumstance, because it's meant to impress upon us and everybody else that these things are very important. We'd like to welcome all the devotees have joined us online. It's just our heart and soul to be joined together here with all the devotees from all over the world. Don't you think?
Yes.
Let's just show them a little appreciation by pointing our attention towards them and saying, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So pleasing. Thank you for joining us. So the vow is important. Find vows that are recommended by the scripture. Find vows that are recommended by the great Vaishnavas. Find vows that you can get your mind into by reasoning well, that these are important for me, and then lock them into your life. And you may start with small vows and then work your way up to big vows, but use that V to dig a little crevasse into the rock so you have something to hold on the vow. So vows are very important about where we place our intention, because every day rolls around and the mind says, let me run free through the internet. And you say, no, you can't run free through the internet until you finish your 16 rounds well enunciated with good posture and with prayer. And after that, we'll think about letting you have 5 minutes. Make vows. Vows are important. Stick to your vow, and if you stick to your vow, you become dhritavrata. Then you become famous. Famous first with yourself. You develop spiritual self-esteem when you keep your vows. Say, I'm keeping this vow, and you do it. Then you start to feel proud of yourself, not in a materialistic way, Ramananda Sakar, you listen, not in a materialistic way where the false ego appropriates, but you actually feel like by Krishna's mercy, I was able to make a vow, and by his grace and by the grace of the Vaishnava, I was able to keep it, and you get a new stature in life because of your vows. And if you just let yourself go, then you end up in the gutter, literally. I've seen it. Last night, at the end of the day, we went to Haight-Ashbury, because, very interesting thing, a couple of devotees rented an apartment on Frederick Street, and it just so happens that it's Prabhupada's original apartment that he lived in. We had Gurudas come down and confirm it. And we were walking down the street in Haight-Ashbury last night. Interesting place in the evening time when the lights go down and the mode of ignorance comes in really heavily. And you can see how affected one can become by the modes. So take your vows and hold on to them very carefully. And our faith is called Shraddha. It's palpable. It's actually tangible where we place our heart. You can check in and see, where is my heart? In fact, at the time of death, this is the great check-in. How I've developed my heart. Think about developing your heart. How are you developing your heart? What's in there? Where are you placing your heart? Where's all your emotion going? And therefore Krishna says, yang yang vapi smaran bhavan tajatyante kalevaram. Tajatyante kalevaram. When you cast aside this body, which will come any time now, then what happens at that juncture is the state of your heart is revealed. And what is that state of heart? It's called Shraddha. Krishna describes it in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita called Divisions of Faith. Shraddha means your faith can be affected by three modes of material nature, or it can be purified. And when it's purified, it means service for service. I'm interested in serving Krishna and the devotees, and this is pure faith. And when it's affected by the three modes of material nature, it goes all over the place. And you notice this test at the time of death. If those who have practiced devotional service during this life have done it partially, then part of their heart will go towards Krishna and the rest of it will be attached to many of the relative things in this world. So we have to purify our faith. Shraddha shabde vishwas kahi suridhar nishchai krishne bhakti koila sarva karma krita hoy. It means that we have this overwhelming trust that by doing devotional service, I'm doing the right thing. Because by doing this, all other things are taken care of. Nothing else is more important. Krishna is not a thing, he's the thing. Devotional service is not an activity, it's the activity. And so with that comes greater and greater attention on devotional service. When your heart is in it, anybody ask you, was your heart into it? You need to say, did you put your heart into it? That's Shraddha, where you place your heart. Shraddha. Shraddha is heart, dha is active verb, means where you're placing something. Put your heart into it. So where do you get that faith? By association. Now there's an old saying, I don't know how old it is, but I saw it recently and I've been entertaining it in my mind quite a bit. I really like this. It says, if you're the smartest one in the room, you're in the wrong room. If you're the most advanced devotee in the room, you're in the wrong room. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, get in a room where people are more advanced than you. I know it doesn't feel good sometimes because you think, oh, I want to be the smartest one in the room. I want to be the more advanced one. I want to be, you know, the big fish in a small pond. But move yourself into situations where you actually have more advanced association, where you're the menial servant, where you're the one who's listening rather than telling all the time. And try to be around advanced association. It's available. It's available, but you have to pray for it because it comes by grace. It comes by Krishna's mercy. If you really want to have good association and you pray for it, you specifically ask for it, because after all, we get everything we ask for. And that's a problem. If you're asking for the wrong stuff, then it's really what we call insult, adding insult to injury. But if you can come to this point of praying for good association, praying for association that's more advanced than myself, then you take advantage of it, then your faith increases naturally. Because when you get around those who have it, then your faith will increase by association and service to those who have more faith than you do. And then there's good old-fashioned practice. Practice is so powerful. It's something that humans can do to reprogram their allegiance to various things. And Krishna recommends it. Abhyasa yoga yuktena, he says also in the 8th chapter. How to get to this point of having one's attention on Krishna. He says, abhyas, just keep practicing. Go back to it. Look at what it takes to play an instrument or to learn C++. Try to put it in relatable terms. Or JavaScript. You got to really look at those little symbols over and over again and line them up and figure out. I don't know what I'm talking about, by the way. But learning is it's something you just do carefully. There is so much there in learning where you find yourself a teacher who's already done it. That's very important, because it gives you faith in the process. When you're sitting in front of somebody who already did it, and you can see that they did it and they know it. This is what Krishna says. This is why Krishna says, tad vidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya uparakshantite jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshina. Get the association of people who have already learned it, already practiced it, already come to the point of being able to place their attention on Krishna, and then inquire from them and learn the practice. This is called bhajana kriya. You have to practice it. Just like when you learn to play an instrument, you have to go through the scales every day. You have to put your finger on the right place and your finger goes in the wrong place. You pick it up, put it on the right place. You keep doing it over and over again for a few weeks, and next thing you know, right, you're teaching harmonium. Everyone should take harmonium lessons and stick to it. because you need to stick to these things over and over again. In fact, my mridanga teacher was telling me, he told me something really powerful the other day. He said, because he was trying to show me how to play the mridanga, hit the mridanga in a certain way that I get a special sound. And it takes a long time to learn how to do it. Like 1 out of 20 times my finger would get it right. And he said, I said, well, how long does it take? What do you have to do? And he said, well, there's a descending grace. It comes by Krishna's mercy. He said, it's not exactly mechanical. He said, if you keep trying and you keep practicing, then suddenly, all of a sudden, you're just doing it. And where did it come from? From Krishna. That's pretty cool. And humans can do that. They can figure out, like, what kind of practice should I be doing? And then just do it over and over again. That's why we have these, you know, this structure. That's why there's an institution that says, do these things. And why did the Goswamis go to so much trouble to spell it all out in a process? It's in the Nectar Devotion. Figure out the practice and then just do it and keep doing it. And when your finger slips off, bring it back. And then there's descending grace. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa nanyagamina paramam purusham divyam yati partanu chintayan. There's a way in which by this abhyas, doing it over and over again, you'll get this descending grace from Krishna practice. It also says, in the Brahma Samhita, it says that, what is my verse? The last section of the, by scriptural evidence, pramaneshu, what? Pramanesh. Tadabhyasar anantaram, there it is. Tadabhyasar anantaram, prana. That by anantaram, by constantly practicing over and over again, then one come to this perfect attention. You can extend your attention by thinking of Krishna by practice. You have to practice. And where else? Krishna says, prayana kale manasa chalena bhaktya yukto yoga balena chaiva bruvor madhye pranam avesha samyak satam param purusham upaiti divyam. So these yogis, they practice over and over again so that they get the yoga balena. You have to have some strength. You have to do it and practice it, and then you get some yogic power, some yogic strength. And the highest strength is to be able to fix your attention on Krishna. And then actually, by doing that, one comes to a natural flow of, because there's a taste, to think of Krishna naturally, out of spontaneous affection for him and the whole practice. So all these things are meant to allow us to take advantage of our greatest asset. And what is our greatest asset?
Attention.
It's our attention. It's just think of the fact that you're different from the squirrels, because as Ramana Nisaka Prabhu so aptly pointed out, they're programmed to run up trees and get nuts and do all kinds of stuff. You can train squirrels to do other kind of interesting, tricky things, but you can't train them to think of Krishna. It's not possible. But human beings can attain the perfection of life by using their highest, most important asset, which is their attention span, and using the methods of taking vows, developing faith by association, and practicing. How much do they practice? A lot. Got to practice a lot. How much? Yeah. How much do you practice? A lot. You got to practice a lot. If you want to get, if you want to advance in something, practice a lot. I was listening to a YouTube the other day. Some Indian professor teaching Sanskrit. He was telling his students, "You practice 6 hours a day, then very soon you'll be blessing." You're darn right, 6 hours a day. And those who are very serious about devotional service, they practice, not 6 hours a day, all day long they're practicing. It's just constantly practice, keep practicing. It's a whole lifetime experience, and you can come to the perfect stage. That's pretty, there's nothing as encouraging as progress, is there? Get a little progress. So practice a lot. Practice a lot. If you practice a little, you go back to the music teacher and he goes, "Oh, you practiced a little. You practiced a little. Or you didn't practice at all." Music teacher knows right away. When I was a kid, I, like every other kid, started to learn how to play guitar. So I had this guitar. I had to go into Berkeley for my lessons from Lafayette, carry my guitar. Sometimes I'd hitchhike to get in there. And get in there. He was blind. He was a blind guitarist. And as soon as I'd start the lesson, he'd go, "Oh, you didn't practice." He didn't have to ask me, "Did you practice?" He said, "Oh, you didn't practice, did you?" It's like he could tell immediately. It's such a... if you practice devotional service, if you practice your japa, you could tell the difference. Everybody can tell the difference if you practice japa. And if you don't practice, if you just do it mindlessly, without attention, you can go on for a million years and you'll be in the same spot you were before. Got to give attention. Attention's so powerful. You can burn a hole in things with your attention if you focus it just right. Now we'll take a couple of reflections. Yes. So enthusiastic.
So
can't even wait for the mic. That's real utsahan. Okay, go ahead.
So, attention, right? So, it seems that it becomes very much inherent at a point that we are in a mode of urgency.
Well,
or we are.
Oh,
in
you
the
mean
mode,
when you're in emergency?
When you are in the mode
when
of,
there's a sense of urgency, then the attention comes.
Attention is focused.
Oh,
in
yeah.
Material world, I've seen it with my guys, with my friends. There is an examination coming closer. They would be just loitering around here and there, and they would not be having any attention span at all. And just to your point that you say it many times, you sit there, read it, nope, they wouldn't put their mind. But examination is just 2 days away. Just hunker down and then just start focusing, and they just don't move anywhere. So I've also realized this. Prabhupada has said many times in lectures that there should be a mode of urgency in our mind, that mode of urgency, like Maharaj Parikshit had a mode of urgency, an emergency. That's he felt, oh my God, this I've got only 7 days, and I, you know, I got to do something. What can I do, right?
Yeah.
So that seems to be putting ourselves. Of course, the rest everything comes in place. Like vow, yes, I take it, and then Shraddha, okay, because you know I've got this little time and the adrenaline flows in. It's just like, to your point, somebody hiking, because they are really put in a spot that if they don't pay attention, they're going to die. And the runner, right, he's running and his adrenaline kicks in because I got to do it because he's in that spot, you know. So he can't take, like a marathon runner, if you see like 18, 12 miles, whatever he's running, he'll be taking cool. But as he approaches the end point, he's going to put all his focus, and whoever wants to win, he wins. So to a point, I feel that there's one more attribute which would really help increase focus is the fear of, you know, there's this emergency, the factor that, you know, we don't have much time in this life.
Yeah.
You know, that also seemed to help.
Very nice point. The sense of urgency is actually a sign of advancement in devotional service called Advyartakalatvam. Interestingly, in the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatan Goswami, he listed 9 symptoms of bhava. Bhava means it's a very advanced stage when the heart begins to soften and one develops this natural attraction for Krishna. And one of the symptoms of that is called avyartakalatvam, in this sense of urgency. I don't want to waste a second. It's so valuable. Prabhupada mentions how Parikshit Maharaj had 7 days to live. And he said, we don't know if we have 7 seconds to live, but everyone's thinking, I have 7 millions of years to live. That's the kind of lazy mind where it's just like, I'll do something else. But to fix one's mind, one has to have this sense of urgency, which can be cultivated, actually, in the beginning, by this kind of awareness that I'm kamala jala jala jivana talamala. I'm like a little drop of water on a lotus that can slide off at any time, and don't take it for granted. Sometimes, I had this experience, and I was taking a nap, and I lie on my left side, and then I can hear my heart beating, and I just became aware of its beating, and I'm not doing anything to make it beat. And I'm thinking, if I'm not doing anything to make it beat, I can not do anything and it can just stop also. I have no real control over it. In that awareness, putting my attention into that, I became aware temporarily of my existential condition, which is that I'm temporarily here. I'm just lingering. Anytime I can slide off. So keeping that sense of urgency is very important. You make nice points. Very good. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. The point of Shraddha, I like very much, like how sometime advanced devotee cultivate their heart. And being in their association, you just get soaked. Like yesterday, we had privilege of having Radhana Swami Maharaj in our campus. And then when he was leaving, then Kanka Mataji asking that, where you want to sit, in the front or in the back? So then one of the duty tell that friend, and then Maharaj immediately told, whatever you say, I will just follow. So I can say that how they are always in the mood of being servant, that they have cultivated, and just doesn't come like that. If the answer is from their heart, we can feel that.
Yeah, I was just reading the other day about how you can pass a microphone over there, Preek Shori, and one to Aditya. What was I saying? I was just reading the other day. Forget it. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Thank you very much for elaborating on this point of giving attention, because we have a lack of time in this world. But you also mentioned that we have a lazy mind, and sometimes until life hits us hard or we have some kind of experience, we don't understand that there's no time. And instead of learning from experience, what is the most effective way to convince our mind that, you know, that on a practical side, that there isn't that much time left, and that there's no other time better than now to start focusing?
Well, it is, there are artificial ways to do that, and that's why we build in vows, because there may be a way in which my mind is lazy, therefore I regulate it, because it wants to do whatever it wants to do and not be focused. And in that preparation, if we can carefully cultivate our practice, instead of doing it mindlessly, if we do it carefully, there's just really a thin veil that we can break through and become aware of our precarious situation. If you just think about it, be a little introspective. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada talks about how anyone, he said, even a common man can become self-realized by introspection. If you just look within, take a little time to look within and see that you're getting intelligence from the Supersoul. And by the same token, if one can cultivate an understanding of one's precarious situation. For instance, if you take a moment to consider the fact that your heart is beating, as I just mentioned, and it could stop at any time. Satyadeva Prabhu, who was a paramedic, as you most know, most of you know, for 20 years, I used to ask him all kinds of questions about how people die and things like that. That's our main topic of conversation. And he'd say, it's just mysterious. He used to tell us when we were having programs at my house every Thursday night, then every Friday night, he would come to those programs, and he was on the ambulance all week long. So he'd come in, and he'd always divulge, how someone died. Someone was driving down the freeway on the San Mateo Bridge. That's the 92, going east, and she was driving one of those pickup trucks, and there was a metal bar in the road that just got kicked up from the wheel and came up through the car, and just she was impaled by that. That's how she was driving at 80 miles an hour without, just in 1 second, and she died. And I asked him about, why the heart stops, and he says, sometimes it just stops. In fact, it's a miracle that it's going at all. Like, how does it work? There was a convention of cardiologists in San Francisco. This is probably about 20 years ago. I was still working in the San Francisco airport. Working means I had a booth from which I was distributing books. And I was at Moscone Center, so there were thousands of them from all over the world. And I asked each one of them, so what makes the heart beat? And what makes it stop? I was just asking a simple question like that. And there was a mystery. These are top cardiologists in the world. And if you just cultivate a little awareness of the fact that our breath is a gift, and try to recreate that situation in which you've experienced at least some time in your life of your precarious situation, kamala dala jala jivana talamala. And then you can do that before you chant japa, and then call out to Krishna, please, I'm helpless. Rather than being comfortable and thinking I've got it made in the shade and I'll live for 7 millions of years and death is for other people, not for me. It kind of helps just to be a little introspective. You can cultivate it. Yes, I don't want to neglect the online because I may get chastised.
Well, I just wanted to let you know that Bhaktin Pramila, she's watching you from India. She went to India.
Haribo!
Our crafts teacher.
Thank you.
And then this message is from Khonika Mataji. My humble obeisances to the lotus feet of Vaisheshika Prabhu. Amazing class. The virtue of taking vow and sticking to it is laudable even in the material world. For example, people who stick to the wedding vows and remain faithful to their spouses are praised in the society.
Yeah, very nice comment. Thank you.
May I ask a question?
Yes, and I'll answer it within 30 seconds because we have just...
Okay. So when you mention associating with devotees who are higher than you and better than you, so what exactly is involved in association? Because people could be living together and still not imbibe all the values.
Mostly hearing. If you hear in the association, this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees who are more advanced than yourself. So that's always a good bet. Better than playing billiards or something like that. I mean, there's all kinds of levels of association. But if you get together, my friend Ruchi Das, who passed away some years ago, he was always into the Bhagavatam. He said, hey, Vaish, let's read the Bhagavatam. And he'd just sit there and read all day. And, you know, get together with your god brothers, god sisters, your siblings, your aunts, uncles, whatever, and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And if you make a vow to read Srimad Bhagavatam, then, boy, you're really into it. This kind of vow where you say, like Kesha Bharti Maharaj, he's been on this thing for a couple of years. He won't give it up either. When he takes a vow, he's really into it. You can look at his records for the last 40 years. He's written it meticulously, saying what time he wakes up for, you know, in the morning, how many rounds he chants, 64 rounds on Ekadashi, everything. And so he's taken a vow, 41 pages of Bhagavatam a day, aloud. And wherever he goes now, he's Houston, Dallas, Denver, where you were there? Yeah, so he just sits down. I'm reading my 41 pages aloud. And then people come in, 20 people, and they just listen. And it changes the whole environment. And so, yes? Quick, we got 10 seconds.
He said, Keshav Bhaj Maharaj said, 41 pages. If you take 41 pages a day, right, nonstop, 365 days, you can finish Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes. That's correct.
Sunday class. Just correct. I wanted to pass and encourage everyone to start.
Yeah, so the answer to the question about association is here in the association of devotees. Hear Bhagavatam. That's simple, right? Very direct. Sit down and hear Bhagavatam, hear Prabhupada's purports, and you will absolutely 100% advance in devotional service if you do that regularly. And you should do it how much? You should do it a lot. And the more you can do it, the better you are. And also counterbalance it with go out to the Haight-Ashbury and distribute Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam to people. And then that combination of those two things will make you advance in devotional service and come to the perfect stage of life and be able to use your highest asset, which is your attention. Gaur Premanande Haribo. And let's offer our obeisances to everybody online. Vanchakalpadrivishcha Kripasanabhavacha Patitanam Pavanibyo Vaishnavibyo Namunamaha.
Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Hey! Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman.